It's March 28th, 2014. The first bill on the agenda is Senate Bill 1805, Senator Saxhog. And we are actually still short a couple members for a quorum, but we're going to get going anyway. And Senator Saxhog, as soon as we get a quorum, we'll do your delete all, but why don't you just explain it and we can take your witness.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. 1805, as you see, I have the A1 amendment, the delete all amendment, and I'll tell you about that. As amended, 1805 is amended when the delete all goes on as a bill that will help identify veteran-owned businesses. We're before you today because of rulemaking. The bill is amended, and it will do three things. First, it will make changes on the definition of a veteran-owned small business to include all veterans and level the playing field. The second part is to include veteran-owned small businesses in the rules. The final change allows veteran-owned small businesses to be included before the new rules are completed and requires that the veteran owner must be honorably discharged. With me today is Mike McElhenney. He and I are going, I'm just...
That great Irish name,
McElhenney. I'm not doing St. Paul any favors. Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. It wouldn't be so bad if we haven't appeared together about 20 times. Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and he's going to give some brief testimony and help answer any questions.
And is that correct, Mr. McElhenney?
That's correct, Madam Chair. Mike McElhenney.
McElhenney, thank you. Welcome back.
Good morning. So this bill comes to you as a product of several years of feedback that we've heard from the veteran business community. We've seen a lot of progress over the years. However, there's still the presumption that we need to have a shorter or a faster way to certify veteran businesses in the state of Minnesota. Right now, the only way that a veteran business can be certified is through the federal VA, and that's a time-consuming process, very cumbersome, as we hear the feedback from the veterans. So what they would desire to do is to have a mechanism within the Department of Administration that can certify them just as they do minority-owned businesses and women-owned businesses, and so that they could compete for state dollared contracts.
And do you need to do rulemaking to do this?
Madam Chair, according to the Department of Administration, yes, we do. And so there's where the physical note applies. And
are there any questions from members of the committee? Is there anyone else that wants to testify on this?
Madam Chair?
Yes. Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, I'd move the A1 amendment for the committee.
We're still short one person for a quorum, Senator Anderson, so we might have to come back to it.
Madam Chair, thank you, Senator Anderson. I appreciate you doing that when you get the quorum.
Yeah, I don't anticipate a problem. So if there's no other questions, no one else from the audience, let's just temporarily set this aside, and we'll take it up. Senator Saxhog, you don't have to stay. We'll take it up as soon as we get a quorum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then that being accepted, would it be recommended to pass and referred to the floor?
It'll be referred to the floor.
Thank you very much.
Senator Dibble, no, we have to get this bill passed, and it gets re-referred to Judiciary, I think, this afternoon. If we pass it.
That's the fast track.
Right.
Lost hope on this one. So thank you. I appreciate your indulgence.
Well, you have an advocate in the House.
Yes,
Representative Murphy.
So I can't take any credit. So, Madam Chair, members, I have Senate File 2066, which would establish a joint legislative commission under the auspices of the LCC. The purpose of this commission would be to take a look at data practices and personal data privacy, to study the issues and make recommendations to the full legislature.
Senator Dibble, are you aware that after you go to judiciary, you have to go to the Rules Committee? Whenever you put legislators on a commission or a board, it has to go through the Rules Committee.
Right.
Okay.
Yes, I am aware of that. So, Madam Chair, I have the A2 amendment, which simply has the effect of bringing down the number of members that we're proposing.
Let's just work off the A2 amendment.
Right. Very good.
Although we can't adopt it.
So,
Senator Eden, would you just chair for a minute? I've got a family call.
So just very quickly, as I was preparing for this hearing, I just off the top of my head tried to dream up all of the data practices and personal data privacy issues that we've been contending with just over this biennium. And some of them came up, of course, earlier, Madam Chair. We have the expungement issue, drones, medical and health data, driver's license data, license plate reader data, issues around termination and severance settlements with public employees in leadership positions, purchase of bulk data, the criminal justice cybers database, the matter of data harvesters and their business and how they conduct that.
So, Dibble, I can't quite hear you. Could you speak a little louder?
We have these issues around private breaches of financial information, whether or not employers should be able to require potential employees to provide their passwords to Facebook, et cetera. We have these arrest photos and warrants for arrest, blackmail, websites. So we contend with a lot of these personal data privacy and data practices, public data practices issues in the legislature. A lot of this lands in our laps. And this just gives the opportunity for a commission to spend some time during the interim to really take a deep dive, in-depth look, surface all of the information, consider, you know, have the benefit of time and developing some expertise, and then it creates some more leadership potential and expertise among legislators. We've been relying on just a couple of folks to be expert on these subjects, and so it might be an opportunity for legislators to kind of share the love, share the burden, share the joy of struggling with data issues. So that's the proposal, Madam Chair. Don Gemberling has been a champion of this idea, and so he's here to share some insights as well.
A quorum is present, and Senator Eaton moves the A2 delete all author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. With the A2 in front of us. And Mr. Gemberling, welcome back.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I'm with an organization called the Minnesota Coalition on Government Information. We're an all-volunteer 501c3 organization that's citizens, attorneys, media people, librarians, and our essential mission statement is to try and make sure that government's operations are as transparent as possible. So, as some of you know, I've been working with these issues for longer than, not NOAA quite, but nigh on to NOAA. And this bill is one of those bills that I think when you look back, and hopefully when Senator Dibble looks back, he'll say, this is something that I did in my legislative career that really did make a difference. As he said to you, you've got lots of issues involving data. One of the things I used to do when I worked for the state was read all bill introductions, and I realized at some point that probably 85% of bill introductions somehow involve data, because they always involve the government or somebody else doing something, and these days that means data. So an opportunity to step back and develop expertise, I think, is very important to you. Because as most of you know, the data issues are those kind of things that a lot of people will go, oh, I'm not too sure I want to go anywhere near this. Now, some of you have carried bills on data, and so you have a sense of what Senator Dibble is talking about, sharing the pain and the joy. So our organization strongly supports this bill. It's received bipartisan support elsewhere, and I urge you to put it into law. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Thank you.
Are there any questions? We had some other people who wanted to testify. Mark Antvinson. Right. Did I get your last name right?
No, you did not, Madam
I did not.
Chair, and I was about to scold you, but I decided I probably that would accomplish very little. So, and the reason I'm not offended is almost everybody mangles my last name. So it's Anfinson.
Anfinson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members Mark Anfinson, attorney for the Newspaper Association. We also support the bill.
Oh, that's who it is.
And I will briefly tell you why. We're not necessarily eager to embrace a new level of what you might call bureaucracy. But this, and when this bill was in the House, one of the members asked the reasonable question, isn't almost everything we do these days kind of complicated, and couldn't almost everything we do justify some kind of a commission? And the answer is, this is in a different dimension. It really is, because of the explosion not just of data issues, but of the technology of data. You've all heard recently the term big data. Most people don't fully understand what big data means, but it's arguably the most ominous earthquake-like social development of our era in time. And where it's going and what it may do to our lives is earth-shaking. I was interviewed last week by a reporter for a magazine called Government Technology, which is quite an amazing magazine. And so to prepare for the interview, I went to their website and I looked at 100 or 150 articles they have posted there about just government technology and emerging issues in this domain. And I'm familiar with information law, and yet those articles and what they deal with and what the cutting-edge issues are made my head swim, and that's not an exaggeration. And so the public state, and the other dimension here is few of us have any credible expertise in these issues or ever will. On many of the other issues that legislature deals with, many of the members, lobbyists who approach you, have some kind of horseback sense, at least, of the issues and how to deal with them. As the big data world emerges, that's not true. The other dimension here that's important about the commission is this affects every single one of us. This isn't just one stakeholder group or another. It's everybody. And it doesn't just affect everybody, but as the big data issues emerge, it's going to threaten our humanity. That sounds like rhetorical excess, but it's not. The way these big data frames are going to work is it's going to challenge who we are and how we're defined in the world that we live in. And, of course, the ultimate problem is the public itself. They don't have lobbyists like me. The lobbyists for the public are you all. Mm-hmm. And that's good. That's great. But to have a commission that's composed of you help advise you about these issues, I think would be, because of what I've just described, an important step forward. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble, do you think you're going to be able to find 5 senators who want to work on this commission? Maybe it should be 3. And I would actually think about that between we don't have to change it, but I think right. about it between judiciary and then probably in the Rules Committee, because it sounds like a kind of a very specialized interest that you might only have a few people who really want to dig deep into right. it.
Well, Madam Chair, that would continue the trend in this bill from 7 to 5, and now 3.
Now 3.
I'll think of, I mean, Madam Chair, it is. It's an interesting question. I don't quite know the answer. Some people shrink at the idea of diving into this. Some people are interested in having, you know, part of the problem, of course, is it's complicated and it's really, really hard for us to grapple with in the context of session. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of shove it off to the Judiciary Committee and, you know, I bet you $100 they'll be here till Senator Hall, you'll be here till midnight tonight, and probably because you're going to be noodling over some of the detailed issues around data. Mm-hmm. Subjects. So maybe if we have some clarity around generally agreed upon values and principles, it might save the judiciary and other committees some time.
Well, there's usually a data privacy subcommittee, and I don't think there was this year, was there, Senator Hall?
Not that I know of.
Yeah. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I like the number 5 on here, actually, because I mean, I'm envisioning, and I've spent just a little time in the Judiciary Committee with various bills that I've had, and they really work hard, and they tackle some of the toughest issues that we see here. So I really appreciate the hard work that they do for many hours. And we're at this point in the session trying to establish a legislative commission on water, because there are some legislators that are really in tune with either water issues or data practices issues. And it would be sort of, I think it would be good for the state to hone down those issues. And I think you could find five people that would really want to do it. My only concern is I can envision your interim meetings being, you know, the Mr. Gemberling and Mr. Anfinson and the five legislators, and I just hope that the public who normally would come to a hearing at the Capitol isn't sort of left out, because I think the public really enjoys watching some of these judiciary proceedings. So I would hope that they would be somehow invited or encouraged to attend, and maybe the newspapers can do that. Maybe that would be a good function, but that would be my only comment. I like the number five.
Great. Senator, it sounds like a good opportunity to add some public notice laws.
I think you're right.
Is there anyone else in the, is there anyone else in the audience that wants to testify? Then Senator Scalzi.
Yes, I would move Senate File 2066 as amended be passed and move to the Judiciary Committee.
Madam Chair, did I hear my first volunteer to be a member?
No.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
You're welcome. As Senator Hoffman comes up, let's revert back to 1805, and Senator Anderson moves that Senate File 1805 as... Senator Anderson. Senator Dahl moves the A1 amendment on 1805. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails. Now, Senator Anderson moves that Senate File 1805 as amended. Is this okay?
Yep.
Okay. Be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails. Senator Hoffman.
Madam Chair, members, I have three bills to be heard today, and I think we're starting with 2353 first. Is that correct?
Whatever you want to start with.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for hearing Senate File 2353. It's a bill that eliminates barriers to the purchase of cleaner fuel-powered motor vehicles by state agencies. This bill was brought to me by members of the Drive Electric Minnesota and the Natural Gas Vehicle Coalition. That coalition is supported and made up of members of General Motors, CenterPoint Energy, Xcel Energy, Fresh Energy, Center for Energy and Environment, Waste Management, 3M, American Lung Association, trucking companies Wendell, CHS, and Seminole. Most have representatives in the room today, but in the interest of time, I am not going to bring those folks to the table, but they are available if some questions go deep in the weeds. So Senate File 2353 just removes obsolete language from existing statute and creates uniformity and consistency throughout the procurement statutes. This bill removes the current language, if such a motor vehicle is reasonably available at similar cost to other vehicles, and that's simple. It's outdated and no longer necessary. The alternative fuel vehicles now are reasonably available at a similar cost to other vehicles. When the statute was originally written in 2007, electric vehicles were newer to the marketplace and available at a much higher price point. Natural gas vehicles were a brand new technology and not yet available. So Senate File 2353 has bipartisan support, and its House companion is currently on the General Register. So there's no need for a fiscal note in this legislation, Madam Chair. I'm happy to stand for questions.
Is there anyone here from admin that is here to comment on this, or have you been in touch with them, Senator Hoffman?
Madam Chair and members, yes, admin is fine with the changes here and make it consistent with what's going on in the House.
You're going to come forward. Welcome. Just please state your name for the tape.
Madam Chair and members, Nikki Gincola, Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Administration. And Paul Hansen here is our Fleet Director for the Department. And we have no issues with this. We think it's good and moving us in the right direction, and it's absolutely something that we can work with.
Great. Thanks. And Mr. Hansen, any other comments?
No, I can agree with questions.
Okay. Any questions from members of the committee? Is there a motion? Senator Dahl moves that Senate File 2353 be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. Anyone else want to testify? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you very much.
Senate File 2352 will be next. Again, the same. This bill was brought to me by the same folks of the last bill. It is supported by the same individuals, General Motors, CenterPoint Energy. The list goes on. This legislation modifies the state smart fleet requirements by removing the goals and actions and requires the Smart Fleet Council to make a report to the governor and legislature. In addition, the commissioners of natural resources and transportation are specifically named as members of the Smart Fleet Council. They were covered in the existing statute, but due to their large fleets, it was thought that they should be specifically named. And Madam Chair, at this time, I do want to offer an author's amendment, which is A1, which should be handed out to you right
we
now.
We have the A1 amendment. Senator Eaton moves the A1 author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Is this like a cleanup on session bill?
Madam Chair and members, yes. This is also consistent with what's going along in the House that is currently, I believe, on the floor. So.
And Commissioner Gikolas, is that right? Gikolas.
Gikolas, yeah.
I wrote a G for the G. And Mr. Hansen, any comments?
No, just a little comment on Smart Fleet. Smart Fleet was the existing committee. It expired in 2009, but this committee still meets. And so just naming it as the committee, we have every intention of continuing and moving on with these goals.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, to the testifier, how often do you meet?
I
thought it mentioned something about every odd year on this?
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Gikolas.
Senator, the committee meets actually once a month.
Once a month.
The reporting that would be required here is every other year. We're reporting. We track fuel usage on a monthly and quarterly basis, but the committee itself meets every month.
And there's no fiscal note on this.
Any other questions? Anyone else want to testify? Any motions? Senator Johnson moves that Senate File 2352 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Once again, this is Senate File 2887, and this is brought to be by members of the Drive Electric Minnesota and the Natural Gas Vehicle Coalition, the same group that I listed earlier. A very collaborative group and partnering to get things done this year. This bill removes the arbitrary 10% price premium cap in Minnesota Statute 16C, 0.138 for electric vehicles and natural gas vehicles, and it adds a taxpayer protection language that states that requires the total life cycle cost of ownership. So it's consistent with what we're doing in the previous bill, but it be used as a measure rather than an upfront 10% premium cap. Prices of the electric vehicles and the natural gas vehicles, as you know, have come down since the inception. But the initial cost should not be the only consideration. Life cycle cost savings, both on maintenance and fuel costs, are there. And Paul from the Department of Administration is here for any deep weed questions, but there's not raised any concerns regarding this legislation. It has bipartisan support, and like its House companion, is on the General Register as well.
Senator Hoffman, why didn't you do these three bills in one bill? Why did you do three separate bills?
Great question. Maybe next time we'll do it as one bill.
Yeah. It's just more work in three bills. We're trying to have less work.
I'll duly noted, Madam Chair. I won't.
All right. Comments from the testifiers?
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
Just a curious question for the testifiers. How are we doing on electric vehicles or natural gas vehicles, or how are we doing right now on some of those things?
Mr. Hansen.
Chair, Paul Hansen here with the Fleet and Surplus. And Representative, currently we only have two electric vehicles in our fleet with admin, but there are others throughout the state, which, you know, like the Chevrolet Volts. As far as natural gas, just really starting because the stations are just starting to come into the southern part of the state. I do know that DOT and DNR are exploring getting into natural gas pickups and things like that. We currently do not have any in admin fleet. However, the opportunity, I think, is coming. It's just on the sun's, on the, you know, it just, next few years, I think we'll start seeing them in the, in our fleet, too. So, thanks.
Any other questions? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hansen, have you made comparisons between the mentioned vehicles here, the hybrid vehicles, the electric vehicles, and the natural gas as far as comparison and prices before? I mean, you say you don't have natural gas yet, but have there been some preliminary investigation on these and comparisons between them?
Mr. Hansen.
Chair, Senator. I have done some on my own. There's also plenty of information out there from, that is put out by other user groups and other fleets that will tell you there's charts you can put your information into, and it'll develop your payback over time with a natural gas truck, for instance, or for electric. And so the tools are there to do that calculation. I currently am looking at our hybrid vehicles we have in our fleet, and they operate about 6 cents per mile less than a standard car, so by comparison. So over time, the payback is there, even though they're higher priced up front. So,
thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, and I think Mr. Hansen, is there an availability of plug-ins for all of the cars in the fleet throughout the state?
Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair, Senator, that's currently also an issue with electrics, is because the infrastructure is not quite there yet, but it's being worked on. It's being they're being added throughout the city, and you can a lot of times plug them in just a standard 110 outlet too, and overnight they'll charge. So it's not a huge issue, but the charger is much better and more productive for you.
Madam Chair,
Senator Johnson,
and members, a friend of mine has just bought a Tesla. And, ooh, is that cool. He gave me a ride in it, too. And but he says the biggest barrier is the lack of plug-ins. So he's limited to 300 miles. He can go 300 miles on his car, but after that he has to have a plug-in. And, you know, there are so few of them. So if we have more state cars that are electric, we're likely to have more plug-ins.
I think we have them in the city of St. Paul. Yeah. Our mayor is big right on that.
Madam Chair, if I may address again, I personally own a Chevrolet Volt, so I can testify. I got my own charger in my garage, so I've gone the route personally.
Yes.
So I do understand alt fuel vehicles and electric vehicles and how they work. And with that is extended range. I've gone to Bismarck, North Dakota, and back. So if
on
you
one
get into
charge?
The, no, because you run on gasoline when you run out of electricity with a Volt. It has an engine in it. So that becomes an extended range electric vehicle, which is something we have been starting to purchase more of, but as the price comes down. So, but the true electric car, that is also a vehicle that you just really have to place in a proper position so that you don't have the range anxiety of somebody running out of electricity in the middle of nowhere and no place to charge. So it truly has to be application-based. And we do have some electric e-rides on the Capitol grounds here now that are complete. So
cool.
Perfect place for those because they don't leave the grounds. So.
Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience want to testify? Any other questions from the committee? Senator Hall.
Just a quick one. How many vehicles do we have in the fleet?
Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair, Senator, currently our vehicle count is 1,729 with the admin fleet.
Okay. And thank you. And on the payback, as it's estimated, is it a large difference if gas prices fluctuate as part of the estimation for whether we stay with gas or whether you buy the electrical. I mean, if gas prices went down a dollar now, would that make a big difference, or is gas not the problem?
Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair, Senator, that does become part of the equation. If gas prices would drop considerably, yes, it would take a long, it would be a longer return on investment term. So.
Okay.
Okay, does anyone want to offer a motion? Senator Eaton moves that Senate file 2887 be amended. Be recommended to pass, sent to the Senate floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
I wanted to announce that in terms of Senate File 1870, if anyone's here for that bill, I got a note from Senator Dietzick that after conversations and assurances from the State Arts Board that they will be doing the study discussed in the bill, whether there's a law or not, it was decided that during this unsession we do not need the law. So Senate File 1870 will be removed from the agenda. And Senator Eaton's going to take over.
Right.
Let's start with the charitable gambling. So we'll start with 2642.
Senator Pappas, whenever you are ready.
Madam Chair, I have with me Mr. Al Lund from Allied Charities of Minnesota, and this is kind of a cleanup bill for them with a few minor policy provision changes. I think we have an amendment as well, and I'm going to ask Mr. Lund to kind of explain the what they would like.
Thank you, Senator. Madam Chair, Al Lund from Allied Charities of Minnesota, Executive Director. The A7 amendment before you does several things from the bill. The bill has, if enacted, has some requirements for data privacy that will no longer be required. But we did need to clarify that there are still provisions in law in regards to our prize receipts that still will be there, and the retention records on those will stay the same. There was a section, Section 4, that was in the bill, but got put in the bill by mistake, and that is being removed. There was nothing in there that had anything to do with this bill. Then there are also two provisions that Senator Hall had brought forward for exempt organizations that deal with raffles, and then that necessitated some language that the Gambling Control Board requested on manufacturing requirements, serial numbers, and the such that.
Mr. Lund, are we talking about an amendment?
The A7.
I don't think people do. People have the A7 amendment?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
We do.
I do not.
Yes, we do.
Someone can just bring me the A7.
Madam Chair.
The page is too put in.
Madam.
Senator Hall.
Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Should we move this A7 as we start talking about it?
Senator Pappas?
I'll move it if that's...
Okay, yeah. Senator Hall.
I'd like to move the A7 amendment.
Senator Hall moves the A7 amendment. Is there any further discussion? Or it's an author's
amendment?
An author's amendment. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries.
Try it again. Where did you leave off?
So, well, just approve the A7?
Yes.
So now go over the bill? So the bill that we're offering this year is a compilation from the manufacturers, the distributors, the charities, the Gambling Control Board that cleans up some language issues, removes some barriers, and provides some incentive for charities. One of the provisions is raising the amount that the manufacturers can spend for marketing from $25 per charity to $250 per charity. We have a provision removing the the audit requirement. Charities today are required to have an audit if they have $750,000 in sales, where the AG's audit requirement is actually $750,000 in income. $750,000 in sales for us equates to about $135,000 in income. So we're asking to go to the AG's that we would no longer have our special audit requirement, but we would still be under the AG's audit requirement. We have an issue with organizations today are looking to go together, and currently today you would need to wait 3 years if two organizations got together. This bill, if enacted, would allow two charities, as long as one of them was currently licensed and in good standing, that the 3 year wait would be waived.
Section 3. Just tell them the section.
I'm sorry. I apologize. That was Section 3. So Section 4 was the one that's being deleted. Section 5 is the marketing incentive. Section 6 is a disposable bingo selection device, and this was requested by the Gambling Control Board that covers serial numbers and form numbers. Section 7, again, covers the marketing incentive. Section 8 is a bingo card. We would now be allowed to have two numbers in a bingo space. It increases the chances of our players winning a bingo game. Section 9 clarifies what a bingo pattern is, that a bingo pattern must have at least three numbers in it. Section 10 is one of the identification requirements that I had told you about. Currently, we're required to keep the information on our players for 30 days that play the electronic games, and that's been a barrier, plus the issue of keeping that data and keeping it private, so that with the amendment, would if passed, we'll take that away, but not remove all requirements for data. Section 11 has got to do with tip boards, and basically to allow the potential for greater use of by charities. The Section 13 is, again, that identification requirement. Section 14 allows prizes to be displayed versus today you have to have them on the cards, on your raffle tickets. This would allow for the prizes to be actually displayed where people can see them. Section 15 deals with restrictions. Currently today, if I volunteer to sell meat raffle at my Legion, I have to wait 6 weeks to participate, go back and play bingo or buy pull tabs. This requirement would allow us to now, I could go in, if I sold on a Sunday, I could go in Monday and play bingo, buy pull tabs. Section 16 has got to do with deposits. Currently today, for electronic deposits, you have to make them every 4 days, which we thought was a good thing. But it turns out that the charities are having to make bank runs for as little as 30 cents. So now, in conjunction with the Gambling Control Board, we've come up with, once you hit $2,000, you need to get that money in the bank. Section 17 deals with that audit requirement that I had touched about. Section 18, this was, again, brought to us by exempt organizations, but we think it's a really neat idea, where a bingo game now can be called Cover None. Last person to not have a number wins the bingo game. So just another twist on bingo. 19, linked bingo prizes. Charities cannot be required to put in more than 85% of that prize. Hot ball is just another twist on bingo, where at the beginning of a bingo session, a charity can draw a ball, and that ball, if you bingo on that during any of the games during the session, you would win an additional prize up to $500 that is funded by the charities and requires no additional money from the players. Section 21, the progressives, just clarifies that progressive games can start at any amount up to $500. And then Section 22 and 23 deals with debit cards. And we're asking permission for charities to use debit cards. We understand that this is a change for us. And really, we have two reasons for this request. One is that we are transitioning to a cashless society. I have a 35-year-old son, never has any cash when he's with me anyway.
Yeah.
And the other reason is that our major competitor, the Minnesota Lottery, decided that that was what they wanted to do, and they did that. We're coming to you to ask permission to do that. We do believe that in the future it will be something that we will need, but it is not anything that is going to be required of a charity. And if anybody has worked with taking credit cards before as a retailer, you have a great deal of responsibility. And charities will not take that lightly, entering into that if that's what they want to do. But we are asking for your permission for that. And then there's a repealer for pricing reports that manufacturers and distributors have been required to submit, that we are told by manufacturers, distributors, and no charity has objected to this, that those reports are obsolete, so they're asking not have to file those anymore. And then again, the last repealer would have to do with the audit requirement, the special audit requirement for charities.
And the Charitable Gambling Board supports this?
Yes, ma'am.
And I think if Mr. Barrett is here, he could here. Testify to that.
We worked very closely with the Gambling Control Board.
And then, Mr. Lund, I don't think Ducks Unlimited could make it here today, but would you describe again what they want in the 8-7 amendment?
Madam Chair, they were looking, so in Section 1, the continuation raffle, which is a raffle that would continue that requires, again, no additional money from the player. But if the raffle did not conclude today, it could conclude tomorrow, could actually go on for a year in what they call calendar raffles. And then Section 2 of the amendment, it adds the raffle boards in there as gambling equipment and the disposable sealed placard, where you could have an event, a bingo event, like when you started your games, where you'd sell out 75 tickets, and then you'd open these tickets, and someone could win a bingo prize before you start your session. So, and then Section 4 deals with what a raffle board is, and the standards that again were requested by the Gambling Control Board. So, Senator Hall, I believe that was
part of that. Yep.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I had a question related to the Section 3 where two charities may merge without the three-year waiting period. And the language doesn't say it, but something triggered when you said if one of the charities is licensed and in good standing, does that mean that the other one may be unlicensed and not in good standing? And if so, what mechanism do you have to make sure that we're not allowing somebody who's run afoul of the regulations to join in with a good charity?
Madam Chair. Senator Scalzi, great question. And that would be the final overview is from the Gambling Control Board, but the idea was a charity that did not currently have a license, but the idea would be you need to be in good standing. It could be two charities that actually had licenses, but the way it was written was you didn't need to have two charities, but with the overall expectation that, yes, you have to be approved finally, okay, but you need to be in good standing.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lund. Any further questions from the committee? Do you have other testifiers, Senator?
No, unless someone else in the audience.
Any other testifiers in the audience? Seeing none. Senator,
Chair, I would move that Senate Bill 2642 as amended be recommended to pass.
All those who support Senator Pappas's motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. Motion passes.
It goes to the floor, right?
And it goes to the floor, yes.
Madam Chair, then I have 2745 next. And
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, this is the Department of Revenue's on session bill, and with me today is Assistant Commissioner Terry Steenblock, who will just take us through the bill.
Ms. Steenblock.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Terry Steenblock, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Individual Taxes. And we are here today asking for changes to the debt collection statutes that removes outdated information and technical jargon. In 1994, the Debt Collection Act was passed, and Minnesota Statute 16D was created. And that language established a centralized collection process. State agencies were required to refer their debts to an agency, and that agency was the Department of Revenue. Since 1994, the collection of other agency debt has evolved, and language used in 16D is outdated or contained technical jargon. So this bill makes it clear that we are providing collection services to referring agencies. It also removes the phrase debt qualification plan, and a debt qualification plan is simply an agreement between us and the referring agency. So we are asking for that word to be removed and replaced with agreement. It removes references to commissioners. In the bill, it talks about the Commissioner of Revenue and the Commissioner of MMB being responsible for identifying private collection agencies that would collect other agency debt. The Commissioner of Revenue is the one who performs that act, so we are asking to simply remove commissioners and replace it with commissioner. We are also asking to align some of the language in the bill. For example, there's notification language under the fee section, and we are asking for all notification language to be moved to the notification section of the bill. And then finally, we are asking for the removal of the use of the word enterprise. In 1994, when this act was implemented, the Department of Revenue had two units that collected debt. One unit collected tax debt, and the other unit collected other agency debt. So they were known as enterprise. Over 10 years ago, those units are now combined, and they collect both tax and non-tax debt. So we're asking for the removal of the phrase enterprise throughout the bill. And with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee?
Then, Madam Chair, I'd move that Senate Bill 2745 be recommended to pass.
Senator Pappas moves Senate File 2745 be passed and sent to the floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. So I think
then we have 1803, which is the Omnibus Pension Bill, and Mr. Burke from the Pension Commission is going to join me. And we do have two technical amendments that we need to add to the bill. Do you want to add those now or explain them? Doesn't matter. Madam Chair, I'll just move the 24A amendment, and this does what, Mr. Burke?
Chair, members of the committee, my name's Ed Burek. I'm the Deputy Director of the Pension Commission. And the 24A amendment, the substantive portion of it is on line 29 and 30 of page 1. Basically, this change would allow the automatic resetting of the amortization date following changes in benefits or actuarial method. This is something that Ms. Vanek from the Public Employees Retirement Association has requested.
Excuse me, Mr. Baird. I've been advised that we move the delete all first.
Okay.
Sorry.
Good point. And I move the delete all amendment.
23A.
23 is the one on the bottom.
Okay, I'll move the 23A delete all amendment.
And this puts it in the shape.
This is the pensions bill, right? Yes. And it combines all the various bills that you have in your packet.
Okay. Does everybody have it? All those in favor of the 23A delete all amendment say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. Motion passes.
Okay, then, Madam Chair, I move the 24A that Mr. Burke just explained.
Any questions on the 24A? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
And then our other technical amendment, 32A.
32A.
Members, the 32A amendment is technical corrections. It removes an unneeded phrase, the phrase for a basic member, and also replaces an effective date provision which has retroactive language with an effective date statement that simply says the provision is effective the day following final enactment. This amendment was requested by the Department of Revenue, and they don't need the retroactivity, so they're asking for this amendment.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'll move the 32A.
Senator Pappas moves the amendment 32A. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I'm going to have Mr. Burke then go through the articles. If you look at the first page of the summary, it has all the bills that are in the package. And then if you turn inside, he is going to now summarize the summary article by article. So you have a general idea of what we're doing.
Members, I'm working off the summary that you have. It's dated March 26, 2014. It says summary of the 2013 omnibus bill, but that's a typo. It's the 2014 omnibus bill. Article 1 of the delete all amendment is retirement plan membership inclusions and exclusions. Most of what's in this article is simply some clarification of statute. Some student language, intern languages, all being grouped in one place just so it's easier to find. The more significant changes are noted in the summary there. First one is the Housing Redevelopment Authority of St. Louis County. They have been contributing to PERA, but there were some questions as to whether they actually were entitled to PERA membership. In this delete all amendment, it's clarified that they will be PERA general members. There were some St. Cloud Metropolitan Transit Commission employees that have not been in PERA, but there was some argument that they should have been. It has been clarified that they will not be part of PERA General. And finally, PERA in its provisions has a salary threshold for membership that has to date been expressed as a monthly amount. PERA is asking that it be restated as an annual amount, and that is done in the final bullet there. They will use a salary threshold of $5,100 for most government employees and $3,800 for employees of school districts. Article 2 is governing board provisions. This is a one-section article. Basically, the Minnesota State Retirement System board membership provision will be revised to allow deferred retirees to vote in board membership elections. Article 3 is retirement plan contribution rate changes. In recent years, we've added two statutes, provisions which are intended to keep the contribution rates to our retirement plans roughly in line with the contribution rates that the actuary has determined as being necessary to fund the plan. Those are starting to come into effect, and as a result, you have the proposed changes that are indicated there for MSRS General, MSRS Correctional, PERA General. Article 4, Joint and Survivor Optional Annuity, Computation. There has been some confusion in our statutes regarding the proper discount rate to use when computing joint survivor annuities, because we've had a lot of changes in post-retirement adjustments, and those adjustments can change over time for any given plan. The retirement plans came forward, and in order to gain some consistency and some clarification, they requested that a 6.5% interest rate be used for purposes of determining the reductions that would be needed in the monthly benefit for a joint and survivor annuity in order to pay for the survivor coverage. So that's what Article 4 is doing. Article 5 is MSRS Correctional Retirement Plan coverage changes. In this article, certain positions that were placed into MSRS Correctional by the Department of Human Services are being ratified. Some MEDO employees, that program apparently has been discontinued, but the individuals that were in that program, at least some of them were in MSRS Correctional, and they are grandfathered. They can remain in there. And there's a technical correction in a coverage provision. Article 6 is the Teachers Retirement Association, Duluth Teachers Retirement Association consolidation. And in this article, the Duluth Teachers Retirement Fund Association will be consolidated into TRA. The assets, liabilities, and records of the Duluth Teachers Retirement Association will be moved over to TRA beginning in 2014, ending June 30th, 2015. And there are there is a section in here to handle the employees of that association. Basically, they would become TRA employees.
Just to stop for a minute, Madam Chair and members, this is probably the most significant thing in the article, is that we do have a merger of the Duluth teachers into the Teachers Retirement Association. They have a declining enrollment in Duluth, and so, you know, without growth into the plan, without more members into the plan, their funded liability continues to drop. And so the best situation is for them to merge with TRA. But TRA is requiring them to kind of pay full freight, and we're asking the state to participate in that with a $14 million annual contribution.
Ms. Chair.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And Senator Pappas, $14 million a year for how many years then would that be, or have you calculated that?
Members, Chair members,
that
appropriation would end basically when TRA becomes fully funded.
Never.
It's probably about 25 or 30 years out.
Yes, that's approximately the time.
We don't know exactly when that would be. But
any further questions, Senator Scalzi?
No.
Okay. Continue.
I have a question, Madam Chair.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Senator Pappas, could you expand a little bit on the decline? Is it the decline to support? So if the decline is beginning, is it supposed to continue to decline?
Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, it's anticipated that their student enrollment will continue to decline. And at a certain point, you kind of reach the tipping point where you just can't support an independent pension plan. And students are declining, therefore they need less teachers, and less teachers paying into the plan. They really are very much, and then the stock market kind of hit them. They were okay for a long time with stable enrollment and the stock market doing well, but when the stock market dropped, I mean, they were 100% funded 8 years ago. You know, now they're what, 50% funded, 55% funded? They're very low. So they reach kind of a tipping point where they can't recover. And they lost some teachers that were in the local community college. They joined TRA, and some charter schools that were part of the fund, they switched to TRA. So they just don't have enough members to continue their fund.
Follow up, Madam Chair. So Senator Pappas, is the contribution of the state continue to grow? Is that $14 million and it will grow as the decline continues, or that's just a set?
It's spread out over the 30 years, so it'll stay at $14
million. I see. So this is the total and it will stay. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Continue, members, Mr. Article 7 contains provisions applicable to the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association. This association will remain separate, but there is a request in the bill for $7 million per year in additional aid going until the full funding date of this particular plan, which in this bill will be reset at 2042.
let me just interrupt. This is the other part of the bill that's probably controversial, is because of the state aid that's going to the St. Paul Teachers Fund. We did appropriate 2 years last year. This is continuing that appropriation in the tails. St. Paul was in a position where the employer did not make contributions for a decade or so. And so it's never been fully funded. It really created a ongoing point where they were underfunded. Because it was the state that decided that the employer didn't have to make contributions during those years, the state does have responsibility here. We looked at merging with TRA, but because TRA is requiring them to come in with full funding, it was really more expensive to merge with TRA than stay as a separate fund at this point.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Members, Article 8 is Minscu-related provisions. The provisions here, there is a Minscu early retirement incentive provision. It's been in law for several years. It would have expired in 2014. What we're doing in the first section there is we're continuing that provision. We're also continuing a provision which permits new faculty coming into Minscu to be able to elect between TRA and Minscu coverage at the time that they meet tenure. There's also a provision there that increases the exempt earnings maximum in the reemployed and new earnings provisions. Article 9 is police and fire pension changes. The changes in this article are really technical in nature. Some changes in the Minneapolis police and fire provisions to be consistent with some changes made last year in parapolice and fire post-retirement adjustments and various other miscellaneous changes. Article 10 is actuarial assumption changes. This is another article that is trying to address in some form issues relating to the proper interest rate to use for retirees, given that we have changing post-retirement adjustments over time for any given plan and at any point in time between plans. The most significant statement contained in that article is a direction basically to plan actuaries, which directs them to come up with a procedure for more accurately estimating liabilities, given that as plans become better funded, we can expect that post-retirement increase adjustment rates will be increasing over time because of provisions which are already in our law. Article 10 is post-retirement adjustment trigger procedures. As I just mentioned, we have in our laws for the various plans post-retirement increases which are adjusted when pension plans hit certain target funding levels. This is all measured by the funding ratio of the plans. Right now, these triggers are single-year triggers, and the pension plans were concerned that they basically wanted to make sure that they were on a path to recovery, that this wasn't a temporary thing that happened and the markets turned a bit sour and they are in funding difficulties again. So what they're proposing here is, rather than having a one-year trigger, we have to have 2 years with the funding ratio of the plan above this particular target level before post-retirement increases can be upwardly adjusted. We began doing that in law for para plans a year or two ago, and what is in this article is to do it for the remainder of the plans, the MSRS plans, the Teachers Retirement Association, and the First Class City Teacher plans. Is a collection of volunteer fire provisions. This represents the work of the Volunteer Fire Working Group, which is a group of volunteer firefighters, representatives from the Volunteer Firefighter Associations, working with the state auditor and working with pension commission staff to try to clean up and keep clean the numerous provisions relating to volunteer firefighters. The changes in this article I would view as all technical in nature. Article 13, miscellaneous retirement provisions. The most significant thing happening in Article 13 deals with the State Board of Investment. In this article, the State Board of Investment will be given more discretion, more authority to expand and revise the investment options which are available to members of defined contribution plans. Article 14 is one-person small group retirement provisions. The first section in there deals with a Wadena County Sheriff deputy who was involved in a shooting incident some years ago, has post-traumatic stress syndrome issues, but unfortunately the time limit for application for a disability benefit from paraplegics and fire has expired. This section would simply allow the individual to be able to waive that deadline and file an application for paraplegics and fire disability benefits. Then it would be up to PARA's board to review the situation further. There's also a section in here that addresses a problem with Duluth and Duluth Airport Authority salary, certain salary amounts that were placed by the employer into deferred contribution accounts. There was some question as to whether it was salary for pension purposes. And through a court decision, it was determined that they should have been included as salary for pension purposes, but were not. And this section allows for remedial action. There's also a provision in here for a member of IRAP who was denied a chance to elect TRA back in 1994. MinSCU and its agents failed to permit to extend that election to this individual. And under this provision, he will be permitted to join TRA prospectively and to get retroactive coverage by transferring his IRAP account, and MinSCU will be required to make up the difference. With those comments, I would end my comment and...
We have those last three provisions all are buying into the account by paying full actuarial value. It's usually what the pension commission will require. If somebody does feel like they want to join the pension plan, they have to. It's very expensive to do that. It costs thousands and thousands of dollars, depending on how many years ago. But we have allowed it in certain circumstances.
Are there any questions from the committee?
I have a question.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And I've been through this, serving on in the House on local government and in the Senate now in state and local. I've been through this a number of times. And we usually pass these on a bipartisan basis because we know that the state is required to make the pension systems whole. My question is, I just recall the last time we did this, we put in $20 million to make everything whole. Per year for a number of years. Are there any issues that you see forthcoming that will be back here in a couple of years required to do something else? Or are we going to be complete with this?
Senator Pappas?
Madam Chair and Senator Scalzi, I think the St. Paul teachers will still be an issue. I know the governor really wanted to have them merge into TRA. But they did an analysis, and we accepted their analysis that it was more expensive for them to merge. I don't remember the amount. I don't think Mr. Doan is here, but it would be, you know, we're asking for $7 million additional a year, and it would be $30 million, something like that, to merge into TRA. TRA is underfunded right now, and it will be a better situation if TRA is in a better funding position to take on another merger. So taking on Duluth. Plus, we are even delaying that merger a year, giving them a whole another year they're not merging until 2015, to make sure that everything is done right. They really did have to, they rushed a lot with the Minneapolis merger and feel like it's better if they can take more time make sure all the employees know what's going on, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, St. Paul will be the only teacher fund then hanging out there that isn't part of TRA after the Duluth merger. Otherwise, you know, we really have done a lot of consolidation with the firefighter funds. We're getting down to our three major funds, Teacher Retirement Association, Minnesota State Retirement Association, and the local government, EERA.
And, Ms. Chair?
Senator Scalzi.
And I would just, thank you, Ms. Chair, and I would just like to thank Senator Pappas. This is a lot of work in this bill, and I understand that it's taken quite some time, and there's lots of issues to solve. I just appreciate all the work that you've done. I'm just, for the testifier, I'm just sort of wondering, how are we doing relative to other states? There's going through this business downturn that we've had for the past 8 years, this has got to be tough for every state in the nation to make their pensions whole. And I'm wondering, how would you estimate that we're doing with other states relative to our pension system? And are we in the middle of the pack? Are we worse off or better off? Could you give us sort of an overall impression?
Mr. Burke?
Members, it's hard to give a definitive answer on that because the pension systems differ considerably across states. But I think it's very safe to say we're above average. Our pension plans have been very well invested. And the pension plan administrations and the legislature have taken considerable actions over the last several years to address the major downturn in the markets that occurred in 2008. All the pension systems, and it doesn't matter where you were in the country, all these are invested in the stock markets and domestic stock market, foreign stock market, bonds and so on. So when we went down, so did everyone else. But there has been a significant recovery in the stock markets. I believe in your packets you have a...
if we ever do pensions,
pension coverage,
this is the basis
overview
for it. And your weekend reading.
And on page 45 of that, it gives rates of return that have been earned by the various pension systems. You'll notice by looking at those numbers that in recent years there has been some very strong returns, which have certainly helped the pension plans. In addition, starting in 2010, there was legislation. It was called the Financial Sustainability Provisions. It was Article 1 of the pension bill that year, and it considerably trimmed benefits. It cut liabilities to try to bring the liabilities more in line with the assets by reducing post-retirement adjustments in all the plans, increasing vesting requirements, reducing amounts that were paid on as interest on refunds, and various other provisions, reducing deferred annuities augmentation. So basically active employees, deferred members, and retirees, basically everybody covered by the pension plans, took a hit under those provisions to trim liabilities. And that had a considerable impact. The pension plans are recovering well. Again, in this booklet, if you want to call it, that I just pointed out, that there is information on the funding of our various plans, and it is recovering. All of them are. And I would also point out that the presentations that you see there are based on actuarial value. The actuarial value it differs from the market value. The actuarial value starts with market value, but then adjusts it in various ways to get a more stable, develop a more stable pattern. But what happens is that if you have several years of strong markets, which we have had lately, the actuarial value lags behind the market value. So, for instance, the funding ratios that you see for the various plans in this booklet, those are all based on the ratio between liabilities and actuarial value of assets. If you were to use market value of assets, all those funding ratios would be noticeably higher. For instance, the one for MSRS General is noted here. It indicates that MSRS General's funding ratio is 82%. If you were to instead use market value, it's right around 88%. So it's getting close to 90% funding. And the rest of them are all recovering as well.
So Senator Scalzi, Senator Johnson, Senator Thompson serve on the Pension Commission, so they do know in response to your thank you that we do work very hard. I mean, we meet during the interim every month for 2 days to look at all these issues. We have long meetings during session. And I think that the creation of the Pensions Commission has really been helpful to the legislature, and it's been around for
decades and decades.
30 years. It's unusual. Not all states have that. And I think to have a group of legislators, just like we're setting up that data privacy group, that take the time with professional staff to really look very thoughtfully at these issues. Because if we were just to come into our committee like this and you didn't know that we have spent months putting this bill together, and many of these bills don't just get one hearing. They get two or three hearings. We will hear a bill, we'll set it aside, we'll think about it, we'll do some more research, we'll listen to some more testimony, then we'll bring it back again. Sometimes we won't even decide at that point. We'll bring it back a third time. Even on the individual stuff sometimes we spend hours on, making sure we have principles that are also included in the packet that were developed over the years. So it's a very well-run commission. We, unfortunately, Mr. Burke is retiring this summer, and Mr. Martin's going to retire in a year or two, and they're going to be very difficult to replace because we have, like, decades and decades and decades of experience in this pension commission. Just as a note, in terms of total state and local contributions to pensions as a percentage of all state and local government spending, we spend 1.62%. And that is very low. That's among the lowest. I think below us is North Carolina, but above us is New York, Illinois, Connecticut, Colorado, California, Arkansas, Arizona, Alaska, Alabama. We're definitely in the lowest. And so that does mean that probably our pension benefits are a little less generous, that our investments are doing better. I mean, over the long term, the State Board of Investment is averaging still 8.5%. Lately, we've had some really good years at 13%, 14%. But even if you take in the recession, still, if you look over 10 years, we're still doing 8% and 8.5%. And our employees and our employers are paying for their pensions. There's, you know, except for those years I mentioned for the St. Paul teachers where the employer did not pay in, they've been paying. We haven't not had employees paying, like some states like Wisconsin. They did not have their employees paying in. And actually, their pension benefits are not as generous as ours, but they didn't have everyone kind of paying their fair share. And we have always had that in Minnesota.
Thank you, Senator Pappas.
So, Madam Chair, unless there's anyone else that wants to testify or comment.
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, I don't know if now is when you'd be willing to entertain amendments or if you're just looking for comments now.
I think this would be the time for amendments.
Okay, thank you. And I can't help but comment a little bit on Mr. Burek's answer to Senator Scalzi's question. And the conclusion was that relative to many pension funds, maybe most around the country, ours is doing rather well. I would point out that is a significant indictment of our current system because we are once again having to take money from taxpayers statewide to fix broken pension systems. So if this is among the better of them and we still have long-term forecasted deficits, that's why, you know, some people like me have been arguing we simply have to look at a completely new model. But we're not going to do that here today, so let's try to at least change a few things. So, Madam Chair, I would offer the A25 amendment, please.
I don't believe. Anybody have copies of the A25?
I don't.
There we go.
Madam Chair, Senator Thompson, we had a miscommunication about who was bringing copies of the amendments, but we'll get them printed and bring them in right now.
Okay. All right. I don't know how you want to proceed, Madam Chair. If Senator Pappas has more comments, should I withdraw it and wait until they're printed, or would you like me to move forward?
Or you could start explaining it.
Ms. James, about how long will it take? Just
I'm not sure how many pages are in the amendments. Are they all single page?
They're not long,
page?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there's a few, so I think 10 minutes?
Okay.
15 minutes?
Okay, Mr. Thompson.
All right. What the A25 amendment would do is simply remove the state funding of the Duluth teachers merger into TRA, and so that the statewide taxpayer would not be on the hook for that. I think it's important that we have those folks bear the cost that are going to be the beneficiaries of changes in our pension system, and so this would remove the $14,377,000 of funding for that. That's the A25. So I don't know if you want me to withdraw it until we can hand it out, or how do you want to go about this?
Do you have a recommendation, Senator Pappas?
Well, Madam Chair, we do need to, I think we should wait for the amendment until we have it. But we can discuss that. Senator Thompson, of course, serves on the Pension Commission and did not offer this amendment in Pensions Commission. But he certainly has the right to offer it whenever he wants to. I will explain more thoroughly about Duluth, and I don't know if we have anyone here from Duluth. I asked them to be here. But. Is Mr. Stoffel here? Mr. Stoffel, yes. Ben, sit down. Just briefly, I mentioned that we have a demographic issue. Duluth has, I think, been a very good pension player. They, of course, Mr. Stoffel ran the pension fund, but they have. They've gotten great returns. Sometimes they've beat the SBI, but they did have a problem during the Great Recession. And they have this demographic issue. Their employers and their employees have paid into the fund, I want to say comparable to TRA or close to, but I'll turn it over to Mr. Stoffel then.
I can't open. My email isn't working. I can't.
Madam Chair, Senator Thompson. My name is Jay Stoffel, for the record. I currently am employed at the Teachers Retirement Association. I'm the executive, the deputy executive director at the TRA, but I did serve as the executive director of the Duluth Fund for 22 years. I just changed my employment in January. So I'm here as an employee of TRA, but I'd like to help the committee understand the Duluth situation so I can speak to some degree about Duluth. The question about the Duluth Fund is historically it has been a very healthy fund. Running in the neighborhood of 90 to 100% funded, or usually many times over in surplus, overfunded. Until 2007, it was 97% funded. And then with the crash of 2008-2009, it took a serious downturn. And then compounding that is the demographic issue that Senator Pappas spoke about. There are only 850 active contributing members and 1,500 retirees drawing benefits. So we call that upside-down demographics. That's very difficult when a fund is in that situation with a serious unfunded liability to recover. In addition to that, I guess I would point out to compound the demographics just within Independent School District 709, there were two legislative actions that caused the problems to increase. One was in 1995 when the legislature changed the MNSCU system so that those employees, the faculty at the MNSCU facilities, were covered by the TRA. So those staff that were in the Duluth Fund were then moved over to the TRA. And then in 2002, the legislature changed charter school law so that the charter school faculty, the teachers in the charter schools around the state of Minnesota, were all in the TRA. Prior to that, the charter school faculty in Duluth were in the Duluth Fund. But after 2002, by legislative action, they were moved into the TRA. So there were two legislative changes that diminished the active membership of the Duluth plan, and then just the population, the student enrollment, the number of school buildings in Duluth, et cetera, created and has compounded that issue. So it's a number of things. It's demographics, legislative action, and then the Great Recession of 2008-2009. Historically, it's been a very healthy fund, one of the best in the state, if not in the nation. So it's a 100-year-old organization. It's a little sad to see it go away. There have been many bills in the legislature in my 22 years as director that would have merged the Duluth Fund into the TRA, and those were opposed by the Duluth Board because they were a proud organization, very strong. Now the Duluth Board is a proponent of the merger.
Thank you, Mr. Stephan. Senator Pappas.
If in this handout, this was our 101 plan, if you look on the very last page, page 45, and you look at the rate of return, even though the Duluth Fund has about, what, $500 million? $200 million in assets, which is significantly less than the State Board of Investment. They still are getting, in 2012, 15% rate of return and 21.3% rate of return in 2013. They outdid the State Board of Investment, and they outdid the St. Paul Teachers, which also gets a very good rate of return. And they have, Sample Teachers has about $1 billion. Yeah, $1 billion, right.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Stoffel. Are there any further questions? Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Stoffel, thank you. We also have talked in the past in Pension Commission about cost of living adjustments, which created some stress on the system. But I think it's really important to point out the reason that I propose this amendment and my philosophy on this whole thing is not to point fingers or cast blame or in any way, the rates of return that Senator Pappas has pointed out are admirable. But to me, just like with my own, IRAs, whatever, and everybody sitting at this table, we bear the risk of losses, whether it's the result of our own bad decision-making or the recession that all of us lived through and all of us suffered from if we were invested in the markets. But this is an attempt to make other people pay for those losses. So this is do not take this as any casting judgment on how things were done. Many people made what seemed to be very prudent decisions on private investment plans and public investment plans, and the economy hurt them. And we all acknowledge that, and that's unfortunate. But this is an attempt to say, we're going to make somebody else bear the burden for that. That's the philosophical problem I have with it. And so with that, Madam Chair, I would ask for a roll call, please.
Senator Pappas, did you have any further comments?
Just we have the amendment now?
I don't see it as Madam Chair.
Well, that's being passed out, Madam Chair. Just one more comment.
Senator Pappas.
I think Duluth has tried to stabilize their fund. They did freeze their COLA for the last 3 years. Their contribution rates by the employer and the employee are, we could have just done this orally, are comparable to what TRA has required its members. I think that, in government, we often do help one part of the state or the other when they're running into difficulties. This is not so unusual. Bonding bills help one part of the state over others. Sometimes it's not fair. It's not equal. People pay different property taxes depending on where they live. They could be in a high property tax community or a low property tax community. I guess life isn't always equal or fair. But I think we do have a responsibility to teachers who, they've been paying their contributions. And the Duluth School District, they've been paying their contributions. If they were living anywhere else, and if they had merged with TRA years ago, it's just that the fund was doing well. As Mr. Stoffel said, it was fully funded. It was doing better than TRA up until 2007. So I don't think it's fair to penalize them for having played by the rules. And I think that we should help out the Duluth school system. So I would ask members to vote no on the 25A amendment.
So, members, we have in front of us the 25A amendment offered by Senator Thompson. And he has requested a roll call. So any further questions on the amendment? Then the staff will take the roll.
Pappas?
No.
Eaton? Hall?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Dahl?
No.
Hayden? Housley?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Peterson? Scalzi?
No.
Thompson?
Yes.
Torres Ray?
No.
Wicklund?
No.
The roll reflects that there are five yeses and four nays. And I'm not sure, do we want to close the roll or do we want to allow other members to vote?
Could you state the roll again? Because that's not what I got.
Oh, I mean, I'm sorry, five noes and four yeses. Sorry, sorry. That's my...
I got four yeses and six noes.
Yeah. There's dispute.
Now I know why we have trouble with math and pensions.
That's my fault. That is six yeses, or six noes, four yeses. I apologize.
The roll reflects that there are six... yeses and four noes.
Six noes, four yeses. I'm sorry.
I believe that's the final
four
vote.
Four yeses and six noes.
Yes. That is correct. Sorry.
The amendment fails. My fault. So, and are there any further amendments to Senate File 1803? Yes, a further amendment. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would then offer the 26A amendment. And...
And members don't have that amendment, so here it is. It's being distributed, so Senator Thompson, do you want to explain your amendment? Is it different appreciably from 25A?
It's different. All it does is if we are not going to pass the 25A amendment, then what the 26A amendment would do is simply remove the merger from the bill. So Duluth teachers would not be merged into TRA, and therefore there would be no money allocated for that, and the merger would not happen.
Senator Pappas, do you have any comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I oppose this amendment. I'd ask the members to vote no. The Duluth Fund, maybe Mr. Stoffel wants to come back. The Duluth teachers cannot stand alone. They are a dwindling fund and could eventually go bankrupt. And so I think we do need to do the merger, and we do need to fund it. And, Mr. Stoffel, what will happen if we don't merge?
Any additional comments, Mr. Stoffel?
Madam Chair, I think the situation becomes a little bit worse. It could stabilize at some point, but it's really not going to recover to the degree without outside resources. It really will not recover, given the demographics that it faces. It needs some kind of outside resources to get it to 100% funding. It could be a long time before it goes under, but the situation continues to deteriorate, I believe, if nothing has happened. Next year, the following year, it just gets more expensive. So that seems to be the situation, given the demographics that they have.
And a lot of stress for those teachers
Senator
to
Pappas.
Worry about their budgets.
Are there any further questions from the committee regarding Amendment 26A? Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, no further questions, but I forgot to request a roll call, so roll call requested.
Any further questions? Senator Johnson.
Not a question, but a statement. And I think when we heard from Mr. Stoffel that two initiatives taken up here in the legislature to take away teachers from their plan, and then simply the reduction number of students that are there are really nothing they had much control over. If I felt that they were full of blame for getting to this position, I would be more ready to listen to an argument to take this out of the plan. But I think it's very clear that they need assistance, and I'm happy that we're doing it.
Are there any further questions on Amendment 26A? Roll call has been requested. Roll call will be granted. The clerk will take the roll.
Pappas?
No.
Eaton? Hall?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Dahl?
No.
Hayden? Housley?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Peterson? Scalzi?
No.
Thompson?
Yes.
Torres Ray?
No.
Wicklund?
No.
There being four yeses and six noes, the amendment fails.
Are there any further amendments? Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, we'll try this one, the 27A amendment. As I alluded to earlier, we have pension funds all over the state that are financially distressed, and many of our teacher funds experience the same thing. So what the 27A amendment would do is simply remove the merger but take the same appropriation of $14,377,000 and put it in the TRA to the benefit of all teachers around the state. Rather than picking and choosing winners and losers, if we're going to spend that money out of the state general fund, then let's make sure that all teachers potentially benefit from it and not a selected group.
So, Madam Chair, members,
Senator Pappas.
The $14 million is going to TRA in the original bill next year.
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, if I understand it correctly, and tell me if I'm wrong, Senator Pappas, but it is a specific amount dedicated to working out the merger for Duluth. What I'm saying is let's just apply it generally to all teachers covered under TRA.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, I oppose the amendment because then we're not really solving the Duluth problem. I mean, I'm happy to give money to TRA if they need it and if it's a request, but we're not solving the Duluth problem. So this takes out the merger.
Request a roll call.
Are there further questions on the 27A amendment? Seeing no questions, the roll call has been a requested. Roll call is granted. The clerk will take the roll.
Pappas?
No.
Eaton? Hall?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Dahl?
No.
Hayden? Housley?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Peterson? Scalzi?
No.
Thompson?
Yes.
Torres Ray?
No.
Wicklund?
No.
There being four yeses and six noes, Amendment 27A does not pass. Are there any further amendments? Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The 28A amendment addresses the St. Paul teachers, and as Senator Pappas pointed out, there had been a two-year appropriation for that that is now being extended, the $7 million in annual state aid to the St. Paul Teachers Fund. Once again, asking taxpayers statewide to pick up the tab for a particular fund. I feel that is not appropriate, and I would ask for a roll call vote, please.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. If the state had continued to require the St. Paul School District to make contributions during a critical period in the fund's history, this fund would likely not be before us asking for this money. But it was really state actions. Because of the whole mystery of compounding, if you don't put enough money aside, then you don't have that money there making interest. And it really undercut the fund severely, and it never really got, unlike Duluth, which was very close to full funding, St. Paul never got close to full funding. So I do think that it was because of state actions. Now, I could be before you also asking a merger for St. Paul, but we have determined an alternative way to keep that fund moving into the future toward full funding at a more cost-effective way. We're not asking the state for the $45 million that a full merger would cost, but for a continuation of the $7 million. So I think that's a fair proposition and would ask the committee to oppose the amendment.
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair and Senator Pappas, I guess I don't know what the thought process was behind discontinuing the requirement that the employer pay their contribution, but I think that buttresses my argument. They were the beneficiaries then of saving money that they actually needed to be putting into this plan to keep it actuarially sound. So they were the beneficiaries of that decision, but now we're going to make taxpayers statewide pay the bill for that. It just, at some point, we need to hold the individuals that are part of the particular fund accountable to keep those funds solvent.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
And Senator Thompson, you should know this, but St. Paul schools pay a supplement of 3-point-something% over and above the regular rate that TRA pays, so that St. Paul schools are trying to make up from that absence that the state legislature allowed them not to pay into the fund. You know, the economy was doing well. You know, the fund was doing well. And that was very short-sighted of the state legislature to allow that. So, and, you know, that's why the state is being asked now to make up those dollars. The school district has already been making up those dollars over the last decade by paying a supplement on top of their 7% that they pay. They pay another 3% supplement. So I think we have held the players accountable, and the group that has not been held accountable is the state. So I would ask people to vote against the amendment.
Any further discussion of the Senator Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Pappas, will by allowing this to go forward, will this mean that we won't have this same problem next year?
Madam
Senator
Chair
Pappas.
And Senator Anderson, St. Paul has a long-range stability plan, so it is not anticipated that we'll be merging St. Paul. But we are requesting the $7 million a year to continue to stabilize the plan, and they are working in, I think, 2046. They're working toward full funding.
Any further discussion on the 28A amendment?
Senator Anderson, just another comment.
Senator Pappas.
Some people have actually said that funds should not be fully funded, that if you stay around the 90% rate, because this happened in the past, once funds are fully funded, then there's a lot of pressure to increase benefits. And by keeping a little uncertainty in the fund, you kind of hold down that drive. And that's what's happened when the interest rates the rates of returns were very, very high. Then people came in and they wanted benefit increases. And some of these funds did a very smart thing, which was the 13th check, where instead of increasing the COLA, they just provided an additional benefit, additional dividend. But it's very tricky because it's very difficult for legislators then to resist improving benefits when the funds are doing really, really well. And that's happened in the past, and we're really trying to avoid that into the future.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just philosophically, as I think about pensions in general and teacher pensions and other public employees and pensions, you know, if I had an extra $5,000 and I invested in the stock market and I lose it all, I know that's risk. And I know that going into it. But when I start my teaching career at age 22 or 23 and I start putting in every month a little bit of my paycheck, I expect there be some retirement funds there when I retire. And heavens knows, I make so much money over my teaching career, in my $30,000, $40,000, maybe $50,000 a year, that I want to be a vital member of the community when I get my retirement check. And by the way, we don't have rule of 90 anymore for those hired after 89, so we're going to have to work to 65 anyway, or 64, or 66, or whatever it means. And then we want to be vital, vibrant parts of the economy. So for us to pick and choose that these people, I don't know what the alternative is, we just let them go without a retirement on the big Social Security check that they might be getting. So we need to keep these pensions solid. I commend the work of the Pension Committee and what we've done as a state over the years to take care of our public employees. But to not have an alternative and say, fend for yourself, Duluth, fend for yourself, St. Paul, that's not right. Public employees make a big sacrifice for the small amount of pay that they get every year, and then the work that they do for our children and for everybody else in the state, and to say, you know, your pension, we don't really care if you have one or not when you turn 65 after 45 years of service. So these amendments are ridiculous. I think I'm very disappointed in the direction that we've gone here this morning. And I think we can do better for the people that work so hard all their life to work for the good of our public.
Senator Thompson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to respond to Senator Dahl's comments. Certainly nobody that I know, and not myself for sure, would in any way want this to be interpreted as belittling the important function that teachers perform, especially since my sister is in a classroom teaching right now in East Grand Forks and my wife is in a classroom teaching right now in Lakeville. So that's not the point of this. And certainly nobody would want our teachers or anyone else in our society to be stuck without the opportunity to have and grow retirement security. The question becomes, does it make sense to have a program in place that guarantees certain outcomes for some of our people in our state when the vast, vast, vast majority don't have that? The old quote-unquote pensions in the private sector are a relic of history. And so the problem is these systems are extremely difficult to manage. As has been pointed out here, we consider ours to be working well. And yet the vast majority of what we do on the Pension Commission is fixing all the things that aren't working. So I wish you, Senator Dahl, and every other teacher in the state well and that we all prosper. But this is a flawed system because so much of what we do is coming in to fix the problems that are created. And then we don't say, well, we've really screwed this up. We say, oh, no, we're doing well. How could we possibly be doing well when we're constantly requiring bailouts? So I think that lays it bare. But certainly I attribute goodwill and good intentions to everybody in this room. I think we all want our teachers and our other public employees to thrive and do well and have an opportunity for a good retirement. This system is flawed.
Is there any further discussion of the 28A amendment? And Senator Thompson, had you requested a roll call?
I believe I did. If I didn't, mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I intended to.
Thank you. The roll call requested roll call will be granted. The clerk will take the roll.
Pappas?
No.
Eaton? Hall?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Dahl?
No.
Hayden? Housley?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Peterson? Scalzi?
No.
Thompson?
Yes.
Torres Ray?
No.
Wicklund?
No.
There being four yeses and six noes, Amendment 28A fails. Further amendments? Senator Thompson.
And this is my final amendment, just so.
Thank you.
Right. Very simply, 29A. Does with the $7 million appropriation for St. Paul the same thing I tried to do with Duluth, that, okay, if we're going to appropriate the money, let's put it into the fund generally for all teachers in Minnesota rather than dedicating it to an isolated group. And I did confirm that, by the way, I'm correct that as is currently constituted, the appropriation for Duluth, the appropriation for St. Paul would go specifically to that cause. What my amendment would do is it would put in the fund generally to benefit all teachers that are under TRA.
Senator Pappas.
And I'd request a roll call.
Madam Chair, I oppose the amendment.
Any further questions on the 29A amendment as proposed by Senator Thompson? If not, roll call being requested, roll call be granted. We'll take the roll.
Pappas.
No.
Eaton? Hall?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Dahl?
No.
Hayden? Housley?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Peterson? Scalzi?
No.
Thompson?
Yes.
Torres Ray?
No.
Wicklund?
There being four yeses and six noes, amendment is not adopted. Are there any further amendments by any members?
Madam Chair.
Senator Hall.
Thank you. I'd move the A33 amendment.
A33 amendment is being distributed. Do we have a lot of more amendments, or am I?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Thank you. And Senator Hall, do you want to explain your amendment?
The A33 amendment is very simple. The Duluth schools would do what the Minneapolis employees did in giving an equal amount of their salary, which would be 3.64%. It's basically a fair play. If Minneapolis needed to do it, then I think the teachers in the Duluth district should do it, and I would request a roll call.
Comments from the author, Senator Pappas?
Madam Chair, I would oppose the amendment. This was not considered by the Pension Commission, and I do think that if we feel that the employers need to pay a supplement, you know, unlike St. Paul, where the school district really did get off the hook kind of for a decade, I believe Duluth, and Mr. Stoffel can correct me if I'm wrong, the employers have consistently paid their fair share into the fund. So this is a very small school district that's struggling, and, you know, to me this is going to mean less teachers in the classroom, higher class sizes, you know, less social workers for the school kids. They're already pretty much a poor rural school district. They're poor rural and urban school district. So for that reason, I would oppose it, and I do think it would need to be reviewed by the Pensions Commission.
Any further discussion by members of the committee or by any testifiers? I just have to ask one thing, Senator Pappas. How many meetings had the Pension Commission gone through? Do you have an estimate of how many meetings you've held? And if any of these amendments had been proposed at any of those meetings?
We met monthly for two meetings a month. So we probably had at least 10 meetings mm-hmm. over the interim. And then since session started, we've been meeting on Tuesday nights for 3 or 4 hours. So that's like another 3 or 4 meetings. So we've had, you know, well over a dozen, 14 meetings. And no, none of, you know, we've had some, we certainly had discussed these issues, but none of these amendments were suggested.
Thank you, Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. is your point that they should have been discussed there before they're brought to amendments here, or is it that you feel it's fair for Duluth not to have to pay the same thing Minneapolis?
Actually, Senator Hall, my question was based on the fact that I think the Pension Committee has done an admirable job and has met forever and ever and ever, and I'm so thankful that I'm not on the Pension Commission. And thank you for your time. But I feel like this is kind of a late date to be trying to amend this large pension bill if it had not been brought up sooner. It's just my own personal opinion. And I thank you all for your work on the Pension Commission. A roll call has been requested. Any further discussion by members of the committee? Roll call will be granted. The clerk will take the roll.
Pappas?
No.
Eaton? Hall?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Dahl?
No.
Hayden? Housley?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Peterson? Scalzi?
No.
Thompson?
Yes.
Torres Ray?
No.
Wickland?
No.
There being 4 yeses, 6 noes, Amendment 33A does not prevail. Are there any further amendments or questions by members of the committee? Senator Pappas, any closing comments?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I would just move that Senate File 1803 is amended to be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Finance.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hall.
I'd like to request a roll call.
Senator Hall requests a roll call. Clerk will take the roll.
Pappas?
Yes.
Eaton? Hall?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Dahl?
Yes.
Hayden? Housley?
No.
Johnson?
Yes.
Peterson? Scalzi?
Yes.
Thompson?
No.
Torres Ray?
Yes.
Wickland?
Yes.
There being 6 yeses and 4 noes, Senate File 1803 as amended is passed and will be sent to the floor.
To the finance.
To finance. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we adjourn, Ms. Josephson, what's our plan for next week? Could you speak in the microphone?
We have confirmations to take up, and you had wanted to take up the auditor's report on the council's.
And we're going to do that on Wednesday?
I believe so. We'll
probably not have a meeting on Monday.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Hall.
I might have missed something, but what happened with Senator Dietzick's Senate file 1870?
I believe that was pulled early on in the agenda. So
thank you.
Thank you, members. A meeting is adjourned.
Did you bring me all these signs of copies?
And I intended not to.